I'm so happy to see everybody out again, and hopefully everybody's healthy and doing well. But we want to thank you all for the continuing interest that you have in the project. I know, you know, everybody's shareholders, and they've either been in for a long time or a short time. You know, I've been in for a long time, and some of you have probably been in longer than I have. But, you know, we really appreciate the support. And today was really meant to let you know what we have to go through in order to make one of these projects go. This is not an easy process. It took us a couple of months to get Jeff to understand geology. But I thought he did a terrific job today. I was going to announce his promotion to chief geologist, but I'll save that. But it takes a lot. And part of what you learn today is how much time this takes. It's not just money, it's time. You know, just the metallurgical part that we did after we found that there was a carbonatite, after we drilled some holes and analyzed it to figure out what the minerals were, then we had to figure out how to get the minerals out of that ore. That took 3.5 years, Scott. And we're still running more and more tests on that to perfect it and optimize it. It takes a lot of time to get these things done. And of course, I know nobody has a question today about timing or finance or anything else. But it does send a message to everyone. We can't really get a lot of that financing in place until all that work is done. And so, yes, we can use our connections and keep people informed about what's going on, but it takes a long time to get this technical work done. And I know that as a shareholder, I appreciate all those control standards that Jeff talked about for the sampling, all the chain of custody, because that creates, you know, a better situation for us as shareholders, because you know that all those chains of custody are met, that those sample analysis are right. This is a very special resource, and one that we're pretty excited about and remain excited about. So now I know you want to still know about time and financing. So I can't say much about financing. I hope you understand that. Unfortunately, there's this thing called the SEC, and there's another one up north called the OSC in Canada, and I am not really allowed to say anything about financing until we have something of a material binding form that we can then publicly announce to everyone all at the same time. So that's about all I can say on that. Other than I can assure you that as the largest shareholder in this company, there's nothing more that I want done faster than financing. And we're working our tails off to get it done, but it takes a lot of effort. Every bank that we talk to has to go out, as Jeff was mentioning, and they have to send their geologists out to check our core boxes and make sure that the labels are right and the colors were described right. So there's just, these things take time, they take effort. But I can tell you that there is a very, very good interest in this project. We've got 4 critical and strategic minerals at this site. That very rarely happens that you have, you know, more than 2. And we've got 4, and they're all critical and strategic. So that niobium we're gonna produce here, there isn't any other niobium produced in the United States. That scandium, there's no other scandium produced in the United States. Rare earths, we produce it here, but we ship it to China, and then they ship it back. I don't understand that logistics very well, but that's the way it works. And then titanium, 91% of what we use in this country comes from countries outside of the United States. So this is a hugely important project. We're passionate about it, and the work is nonstop. I mean, you can ask everybody here how much we continue to work, weekends and everything else. This project deserves to be built. So that's the best I can do for financing. Timing, that's the simpler one, because we can't start construction until we have the money. So as soon as you hear that we have money, you'll start hearing a lot of noise just up the road here a little bit. It'll happen pretty quick. Scott needs about 6 to 9 months to do some detailed engineering. That's reasonable, because you want to make sure that engineering is way ahead of the actual project construction. You don't want the construction to get ahead of the engineering, or you're not going to have a good, successful project. So we'll take some time to do that. But while we're doing the detailed engineering, we'll start working on some of the infrastructure, the electricity and whatnot. So you'll see and you'll hear it pretty quick. We'll start exercising more options on land. I can't tell you how proud we are to be what I call now project owners rather than project renters. I mean, we are really, really proud to be able to come in here and tell you we're that serious about this project. We bought the land. We're gonna make this project happen. If it's, I also wanted to show you all, because I show everybody everywhere I go now. Here's the new one, my little grandchild. And he's 3 months old in that picture, and he's 5 months old today. And I promised him that he will have niobium from this mine before he graduates high school. No, I'm just kidding. I hope it's way, way, way before that. But he's quite remarkable, and he does take a little bit of my attention. What I'll do now, just because I think it's a way better use of your time and ours, is let's answer any and all questions that you have. And if you do need to take off, feel free. You don't have to sit and listen to all of this. But we are committed to answering each and every question that you have here today, face to face.
I got a question. Mark, will you ship the rare material to China?
No. We will not do that. We do plan to, and again, we've got a lot of technical work that has to be done before any of this becomes official. But between the folks from NioCorp that are in the room here, we probably have, I'm going to guess, over 80 years of rare earth experience. So we know rare earths very well. So our thoughts are is that we will produce oxides. That's what you make at the mining level to get your highest value for that material. The next steps are you have to turn it into metal, then you have to turn it into an alloy, then you can make a magnet. But our goal here is to make sure that we at least help this current situation where virtually 100% of the permanent rare earth magnets used in the electric vehicles today are made in China with their material. So we want to help that situation. I can't produce enough to make 100% of them, but we can help. We can help. Yes, sir.
Can you talk about the pending infrastructure bill and how that might motivate some investment financing?
What's the question?
The question is, can I comment on the pending infrastructure bill and how that may create additional interest in NioCorp? Fair enough? Okay. Without being too political, I think the infrastructure bill would be a fantastic piece of legislation for NioCorp. Because actually within that bill, there actually is some highway and bridge reconstruction. It's not all non-infrastructure stuff. Sorry, I got political for a minute. But whenever we can fix our roads and create safer bridges, that's a good thing. And there's hardly anything more important than niobium to make that happen. With niobium in the steel, the high-strength, low-alloy steel, you don't design bridges for 30 years now. You design them for 100 years. And you use a lot less pounds of construction materials to get to the site, so your greenhouse gas emissions are lower as a result of the construction. There are just so many good green benefits from all of this. And it makes a safer bridge at the end of the day. The roads will use rebar, and that rebar, it can be made with vanadium or niobium. It depends on the pricing. The steel companies will go either way, but you will use some niobium in those roads as well. And again, now you're designing something that's going to be designed for 100 years, not for 30 years. That helps all of us as taxpayers too. So I think it would be tremendous if it happened. And I think just that connection between niobium and infrastructure has to create something positive for our work.
So we should all go home and call our representatives.
That would be good.
I know you can't talk about procuring the financing or timeline. Can you give us a little more color on how you see the finance happening? Is it going to be, I imagine it would be tranches rather than here's a check for $1 billion.
Well, our first goal is to get the full amount.
Right.
Because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you go out and raise $500, you start construction, you've got people on the site, needing their paychecks and your treasury is empty. Not a good position, because the people that you get the next tranche from, their price goes up a lot. So we're going to try to put it all together in one grouping, or close to simultaneous timing. We hope to get as high as 80% on the debt and the remaining in equity. And I think that looks very positive right now, because the revenue streams coming off of this project are quite good. Almost $400 million without the rare earths a year. So this is a project that can take on a lot of debt. So we're focused on that. And then I know there was an interview I did recently that I think caused the stock to drop 15 cents or something, because I mentioned the fact that we're out looking for an anchor equity investment. And I feel badly that the stock did that, because that really affected my net asset value a lot. But I'm not worried about it, because I know what I meant, and I should have just explained it better. We've been working really hard on the debt, because that's going to be the biggest piece. And they're going to have the most requirements on us at the end of the day. They're going to say what your revenue has to be, and they're going to say, they might even tell us what our contracts have to look like. So there's a lot of requirements on the debt side. So you kind of want to get that sorted out first. But while we're sorting all that out, I thought it would also be a very good idea to go ahead and start that equity process. And what we were trying to do was to get about a $25 million, what we call anchor equity investor. And what I meant by that is that the anchor equity investor would be a party that has a name that the debt banks will realize they have the wherewithal to fund most or all of the equity that's remaining. So that's what we're out looking for. And I mean, I don't think it's unsafe to say that I'll bet we've had 30 meetings with equity folks so far. So we're working that one really hard right now. And once we announce that we have that equity investor, I think you'll see a lot of positive things happen in the market. It will boost the debt side faster. But there is all the stuff that we do to get that feasibility study ready. I mean, you've been in the business. The banks almost have to redo it all when they come in and do due diligence. So it's time consuming, it takes a lot of patience. The other thing I wanted to let you know, and these fine folks over here know, the pressure that I get for financing. Because every morning when I leave the house, my wife says, go and get something done. And every night when I come home, she says, what did you get done? And I have to answer that twice a day. So we feel it, and we are absolutely committed to getting this done. There's nothing that we would like to see better than to build it and operate it. That's what we do. Most of us on this team aren't what we call junior mining people. We like big operations and building them and running them. That's what we like. Sir?
Coming from Northeast Nebraska, have you had any talks with Nucor Corporation for use of the rare earths?
Yes. We know them, that would be, we think, a pretty amazing combination for the state of Nebraska. So yes.
It seems to me that the geology is fairly straightforward, and the amount of resources is pretty straightforward, and the financing you've already discussed in some detail. But another component is the political will. I'm sure that you have feelers out and are aware of what the political will is. There's been a lot of emphasis the last couple of years on Buy American, domestic supply. How is that relating or converting into reality for a project like this, which is the domestic production of valuable rare earth elements and niobium and scandium as well?
It's a great question, and it's one that we opine on virtually every day, because it seems like there's another politician that stands up and says Buy American every day. Unfortunately, that hasn't resulted in anything other than cheerleading from the sidelines. But we'll take that as well. And then I want to go a little bit deeper into that, because there's something that we We talk about, whenever we go out on the road shows and talk to equity investors or debt investors, one of the number one things we talk about is the local community support we have for this project. I've been doing this for 41 years now, and I can tell you straight away, I've never been associated with a project that has this level of community support. And we can't thank you enough. That allows us to go out and build goodwill with the debt people, the equity people, the politicians right away, because they know that the people of Southeast Nebraska like this project. And we really can't thank you enough. We cherish it. And the state has been wonderful to work with, the county's been wonderful to work with. I just have never been in this pleasant of a situation for a greenfield mining project. Scott and I have done it in California. A little bit different. What other questions do we have?
Yes.
Todd, now this is two for you.
Okay, sorry. Rivers. I think in the latest PR, they're trying to quantify how much material, rare earth, is in the land. I don't know if it's the land you purchased or you include the lease. I'm not really sure about that.
Both.
I would think that you're trying to find out both the quantity and the value. And I'm not really good about all this apex and all these fancy terms for, other people. But I just say return on investment. Are you there going to have to update the feasibility study and do an addendum to make it easy? Does it have to be really expensive?
I think a lot of that is, I'll just call it unknown right now. So you have to start at the very beginning. You got to take those cores and you got to analyze them. So that's what we're doing now. And then Scott and his team went out and got, the extra cores that we have at University of Nebraska, sorted through all those boxes to get the right section of cores, and those are out being analyzed. And those will be done 2 weeks, Scott. I tell Scott 2 weeks in advance. So I think November we should have results back. Now we have the level of technical knowledge that we are now under, because we're a publicly traded company, we have to have a certain level of classification of that technical knowledge before we can publicly disclose it. So our next step is to take that information, turn it into a resource report. And then the next part, we're not exactly sure how we're going to deal with it, because I don't want to take 10 years to do another feasibility study, right? But I also know that we have an awful lot of collective experience on rare earths in our management team. And I'm pretty sure that even the CEO of this company could take that resource number and convert that into some economics in my head. So it starts to tell us a lot, and then it really is going to boil down to what do the banks expect in terms of that level of technical information. And I'm going to push for as little as possible, but it isn't 100% in our control.
Right. Well, it's icing on the cake. Yep. It's tough to scale. But I think you're just basically trying to map it out like you did with the Niobe.
Correct. We have a whole mine plan. And we know what section is going to be mined when, and we know what the ore grades are in each one of those sections. So we're just adding the rare earth piece to that now. And it all comes up together. So once you bring the ore to the surface, the rare earths are up there. So it's pretty straightforward. The calculation isn't that difficult.
Right. I think it's a good
add-on. I think it'll be a great add-on.
Excellent.
So, Mark, where are the prices at right now? Are they holding up
in Niobe, Scandium, rare earths are escalating because this whole thing is, China has threatened to pull the rare earth card again and restrict rare earth exports to countries, outside of China. So the interest level in rare earths has gone up very quickly. And the part that I like about that interest level is that it's actually coupled with demand. So this isn't just a political whim, that if China decides to produce more, prices go down again. The demand is there. I mean, Tesla is going to convert their cars to rare earth permanent magnets now. The induction motors aren't as efficient. They're not as good as the rare earth permanent magnets. So, I mean, every car company I'm aware of out there has committed to electric vehicles by, pick your date, 2030, 2040. And you take a look at the growth curve that you need just for magnet production. It's unbelievable. And that, I think, is what's driving it along with the political whims as well. But if we want to go electric, you've got to have rare earths. Really simple. And you know, it's actually hard to understand the economics of it because the prices are changing so fast. Niobium, very steady. It has been steady for 50 years. It will be steady for 50 more. Titanium actually has been increasing in price. It's interesting, the rationale behind it, but all the mineral experts are saying that titanium prices are going up because they need more and more TiO2 pigment for paints. And because we've all been staying home because of COVID-19, we're all painting our houses. And there isn't enough titanium for paints right now, so prices are going up. And then scandium, I don't think there's been any change in pricing there. There's a lot more discussion about scandium than there was 5 or 10 years ago. But that price is hard to pinpoint anyway. You know, you can go on, you can Google it, and you can find 100 different prices for scandium. So it's a hard one to peg down. And remember what we did in the feasibility study, because we basically just said we don't know what the price of scandium is going to be. We took our third-party, arm's-length, independent marketing expert on scandium, and we used his prices in the report. We didn't touch that price one way or another. So this is an expert's opinion on what will happen with pricing. There's not enough soul to really monitor it well yet. That's where we come in. We'll increase that supply by 5 times.
Mark? At what point in the mine's timeline do shareholders guess you didn't?
Well, as the largest shareholder, I would say that would be a very high priority on my mind. However, as a board member and executive of a company, I can also tell you that we're also responsible to make sure that we take care of capital needs of the company, safety of the employees. If we find another project that we think looks attractive and we can justify that, then we spend money to make more money. So, you know, that it is the job of the board of directors to determine when a dividend is appropriate. And one of the things I can also tell you that we're trying to get into any of the debt packages we're talking about is that they will not limit our ability to issue a dividend so long as, you know, certain earnings targets are met. So we're trying to leave ourselves with flexibility. I know it's not a very direct answer, and I apologize because it kind of depends on what the circumstances are at the time. But you know, I think a dividend would be really welcome in my household.
Could you please repeat the question before you answer?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to get a feel for, okay, financing is done. What's your timeline? If three and a half years to get the mine up and running?
Yeah, it's a 3.5 year construction project, a 2-month commissioning, and then we've allowed ourselves 6 months to actually ramp up to full production. But during that 6-month period, we're producing materials and selling materials at that point in time. But it's a big construction project, and you need 9 months lead time, Scott, for engineering. So even after construction, we're going to be asked the question, well, when does construction start? Because it'll feel like a long time. Question in the back.
We can't hear what they're asking.
I committed to you that I was going to repeat the question. How long will the construction take was the question. I apologize. What other questions? Yes, ma'am.
There was a geologist over here that we were visiting, and he said this is a much safer mine than a coal mine.
Oh, for sure.
And can you talk about the safety aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we are safety. We like to talk about in NioCorp, like every other company that we've all been in, isn't a priority for us. It's a value for us. Because values you don't change, priorities you can change. Safety is a value for us, so we will not tolerate anything that is not safe for our employees. Let me start with that, because I feel kind of strongly about that. But a coal mine is viewed more as a soft rock type of mine. And oftentimes the coal will be in layers that tend to flake off. So if you're walking through a coal mine and you've got a coal ceiling on top of you, you know, you're constantly looking up because you don't know when that's going to come down. And you'll notice that coal miners always have a pick on the back of their belt. And if they see something just starting to slip a little bit, they'll go over and chip it so it doesn't fall on somebody. We're gonna be in a situation where ours is called hard rock mining. Very competent ground. We check all the geotechnical variables down there when we put the designs together for the stopes. So we know how big the stopes can be, because the bigger, the cheaper it is to mine. But you want to make sure you've always got a safety factor there for your miners. So hopefully that's really kind of soft rock versus hard rock. Scott, did you want to add anything more to that?
Any chance to talk about mining, Mark? I'm going to jump at it. In a coal mine, a lot of times you're chasing a seam. It's horizontal mining, and as you advance and extract the seam, you're keeping the roof up with some jacks, and behind the jacks, the ground behind you is collapsing. I've never been particularly comfortable with that kind of mining, where the ground is collapsing behind you as you advance. But the problem there is you're creating a void, and any void underground will eventually fail. It'll fill in somehow. So the other thing I wanted to say about our mining process is we've designed a system that integrates backfill into the mining process. So we create a void, we fill that void up with a material called base backfill, which is made from the waste products from the plant, along with some cement, fly ash, and water. That fills that void up. It not only fills the void, but it is a structural material that then provides support all around to that area of the mine. So I just feel fundamentally our mining process in this hard rock mine is going to be a lot safer than what goes on typically in a coal seam. Thank you.
One other thing you can talk about is the remining equipment is changing now. We have guys on the surface running the mining machine.
Yeah, so big changes are happening in mining equipment, same as you see in agricultural equipment these days. Everything is going to automation, and the safety quotient that goes with that is increasing. So for instance, now, back in the day, you have an individual miner working underground with a handheld drill, drilling holes into the face to blast the rock and get at the ore. Now we have machines where the operator, the miner, is sitting in a climate-controlled cab. The drill is on a boom on the front of the machine. He points it where he wants to go, and it, in an automated fashion, drills all the holes for that miner. So we are at the point now where we are getting the people in the mine farther and farther away from the hazards. Automation is increasing. And there's a safety benefit that goes with all of that.
Yes, sir.
Since everything's contingent on financing, since NIOCO owns the land now that has the riches of all the niobium, scandium, and rare earth metals in it, what's the risk to the investor if you can't secure financing, considering NIOCO owns all that the riches underground right now?
So I'm not sure I understand the question precisely.
Well, question is if, I mean, the shareholders all are part of NIOCORP that owns all the
right,
land.
Right.
And if you can't secure financing for whatever reason, I can't understand it myself, then what's the options for NIOCORP in that situation?
But as a lawyer and an engineer, I like to segment things out. So, the worst case situation I think you're talking about is
yes,
what happens if NIOCORP goes bankrupt. Well, what would happen is the case would go into a court. The court would establish a trustee for the bankruptcy matter, and the trustee would be asked to sell the property, and then you always pay, the trustee will always pay debts first, and then whatever's remaining goes to the equity holders. So that's that process. And I don't think that way because I'm committed to getting this financing. And I've got a team that is just as committed. We talk about this day in and day out. And we talk to potential parties day in and day out.
Well, that's what the investors want to hear.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Did I understand that 75% of the product is already spoken for?
For ferroniobium, yes. Yeah, one of our product streams. And there isn't a steel company out there that doesn't want to diversify where they're buying it from. Because there's one company that sells 90% of the ferroniobium in the world today. And they do a very good job. I know the company well, served on their board for 7 years. Complete admiration for that company, but it scares anybody in business when you don't have diverse suppliers. It's a risk mitigation technique. Other questions?
Do you have a target share price that you're looking at for you to engage the equity portion of financing?
The highest one possible. One thing that you learn also when you've been in public companies as long as I have is that you have, I mean, if you think I have no control over my chief geologist, I have zero control over the share price. So I don't have target prices. I tend to go for what I think makes the most sense. So, for example, in our strategy of, you know, continuing to work the debt side, but starting the equity side, if we can put a big enough anchor name out there for that small piece of equity, I'm pretty sure that'll get some people in the market pretty excited. Then that helps us. And then if we're not doing $400 million or $300 million in equity at a dollar a share, avoid that.
What happened at the end of June?
Okay, thank you. I'm committed to repeating the question. The question was, what happened to the stock price at the end of June?
Right. It shut up for a day.
I don't remember that day very much. I remember February.
You had to issue the release. IROC has issued a release, which then kind of brought the price down. I think that's the time you're referring to.
February or March, when it shot up over $2, I believe. We don't know. We had announced that we had entered into the deal with Lind, which provided the money to buy the property. We did an interview on Fox Business News.
Right.
A lot of things were happening about then. And then it came down afterwards, and I think that was largely driven by the help of our regulators, who said that because our stock price was moving so much, we had to issue a press release that said we're not aware of anything that's happening.
Yes.
Thank you very much for that help. Yeah.
So, can you go on the investment news show some more?
Yeah, if I could do that twice a day,
I would do that.
I mean, and for a couple of reasons, though. One is because it does good things for the share price, but it also lets us educate more people in a faster way, right? I mean, when we do one-on-one meetings, and I'll do those until I die, because I love this project, and I can talk about it for hours, but educating one person at a time takes a long time. Now, the person I was in New York yesterday and flew to Chicago and then down to Omaha. And the person between Chicago and Omaha, they know everything there is to know about Niagara. There's nobody I don't talk to about this project. I love this project.
That's true.
Other questions? All right, if you do have them, Todd.
Am I allowed a third question?
Absolutely.
To your question, what finance did show?
Repeat the question.
Todd would like to know which finance show I would like to be on.
All of them.
All of them. It hardly matters, right? I mean, just get out there and tell the story. And I really think the rare earth piece of this thing is going to make that more possible, by the way, because that's a hot topic right now. Everybody's talking about it. You want electric cars? Perfect. Got to have the minerals to make them. So, one more.
I asked Jim out in the field this question about, can you get on the Weather Channel? Can you get on the Discovery Channel, the Learning Channel? Can you talk about what you were mentioning you've been kicking around?
So the question was, can we get on any other channels like Weather Channels or Discovery Channels, which I think is brilliant, by the way.
And they're doing it. What did I say?
I think you said you're looking into, or you've been talking to some other networks, but not necessarily the Weather Channel. But
we talk to the media almost every day. As Mark said, dealing with the national media in particular, they're always looking for, you know, one of two things. Some breakthrough new story that's never been told before, and controversy, number two. And we try to avoid the latter, because that usually doesn't help us. So I think the next opportunity for us with some really good national media will be when we're able to put information out in the public about the rare earths. Now we have to do more work. We're in the process of to get to the point where we can legally and appropriately put that out on the market. We're not there yet. And you know, I pitched a story on us being the newest potential rare earth well provider. Well, he will tell us about, you know, what you got, what you're going to make. We can't yet, and that's a legal issue. So as soon as we get to that point, I think our story gets a lot easier to sell. It's a great story anyway, but rare earths, as Mark said, it's a hot topic. It's not going to cool down, in my mind, anytime soon. And the emergence in the U.S. of another potential rare earth producer, and particularly one that's going to make rare earths as a byproduct of what it's art, that's a pretty cool story. So stay tuned.
I think I just made a promise there.
So. I heard it. Other questions?
Question. I know there's a scandium offtake agreement in place today. And at the time, it seemed like there's potential that could be larger than what it is today. Is there more opportunity for scandium offtake today when we are purposely holding that in reserve?
The question is, we have a 12-ton contract for scandium that he understood could be larger, and then asked, are we purposefully withholding offtake agreements for scandium?
So we don't know what pricing is.
For whatever reason. And I can say kind of yes. The one that we entered into was the largest scandium contract in the history of the world.
Yep.
So we're very happy about that. That party wanted more, and we limited them.
Right, that's, yeah.
And I'm of the mind where I want to kind of keep this as a tool for us to use.
Yeah.
And I'm also very committed on the scandium to make sure that what's the right way to phrase this? I don't want the debt banks telling us how much we have to sell and for what price, because that's not a good situation for us as shareholders, because they want zero risk. They'll tell us to take a very low price, and I'm absolutely committed with scandium, much like CBMM has done with niobium. I want the price to reflect the benefit that mineral is providing to the ultimate end user. Right, so I don't want to do what we normally do in the mining business, which is what's called a cost-plus model. So whatever your cost of production is, and then you add 5 or 7%, and that's your price. That's boring, number one, and it doesn't give scandium the credit that it's going to be due. So CBMM did a brilliant job for 50 years of getting value for that, for their product, that's reflected in the price. That is, what is that benefit to the end user? I think that's really a good strategy. It's a hard strategy, but that's what we want to implement at Niobium. We are going to be, you know, the largest producer once we're producing. We will be a price setter for scandium, not a price taker.
Thanks.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Is there any tie-in between IBC and Niobium that you've got going with scandium and And I don't know, I think I may have mentioned something one other time on a call that you had with IBC, but 3D printing, for instance, with Scandium.
The answer is yes and yes.
So let's restate the question, sorry.
So the question is kind of what's the program between IBC and NaviCorp, and then specifically kind of on 3D printing. We do have a joint development agreement with IBC. I don't know, the CEO there likes the CEO here, and it works. But we have that joint development agreement. It's been slow to really progress because the party on the IBC side has been doing so well. And you'll hear about this in a couple of weeks, but their sales have gone really nice. And they don't have enough people and enough time to pay attention to the scanning right now. They will. And you'll also hear about that. We're going to make some changes at IBC that will allow for the technology side of that company to be looked into deeper and more in a more committed way rather than just when we have time. So we'll anxiously announce that, and it'll probably be this month. And I would love to be able to demonstrate that we can make a 4% scandium aluminum master alloy. Right, Scott?
Thank you.
2 weeks. All right, any other questions?
Over here.
Oh, sorry.
Just one. How does national defense fit in this?
Repeat the question.
How does national defense fit in? Well, first of all, niobium, titanium, scandium, and rare earths are all used in our weapons and our jets and our boats and everything. So it fits in very importantly, as a matter of fact. And today, remember, almost all of those metals are being imported into the US to make our machinery. So that concerns me, it has concerned me for 20 years. So it is very important, and I know Jim spends an inordinate amount of time on the phone with the Department of Defense, making sure they know about our project and what our materials can be used in the things that they're making.
Didn't there been talk about stockpiling, and how do we do it when we're so committed to so much of it?
Yeah, we still have a little bit of niobium left, but stockpiling can be a good and a bad thing, so we're careful with it. Oftentimes, when the United States government decides to stockpile things, you will see a positive impact on the pricing. But I've also been on the other side of that when they decide to get rid of the stockpile and all of a sudden things crash. So you gotta be careful you don't get something you don't want. But I think that we would play that very carefully and just make sure that we only commit so much if they're interested. But right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but I believe that the Department of Defense stockpiles niobium and they buy that from Brazil.
Correct.
So I would love to be in that situation. Yeah. And we have some. I'm sorry, he wanted to know how important the minerals were to the Department of Defense. What else can we answer? And if you want to come up afterwards too, feel free.
I heard Jim made a promise about being able to talk about the rare earth elements at some point. Do you have a timeline on that, or a rough timeline?
No.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. It
does not. 2 weeks.
I'm looking for the 2 weeks.
I've been saying 2 weeks for about 6 now, but I know how hard Scott and his team are working on it as well.
Is it going to take a full feasibility study, or what?
It's going to have to comply with NI 43-101, but this is just a resource estimate is all that we're doing, so it's not the full feasibility study. And that, you know, we didn't have to drill to get those samples. All the drilling had already occurred, so all we had to do was go and pull the samples out. They're all at the lab now, so now the lab will analyze them. And labs are kind of funny, right? Because they don't, like, I would just grab a sample and analyze it, but they have to line it up on the counter first, perfectly in order, and get everything set. Then they start, so just, it's just mind-boggling sometimes that we get anything done, but we get it done. And those analyses are occurring, right, Scott?
Yes.
So 4 to 6 weeks realistically. But then once we get the sample results back, then you hand it off to the geologists who put it into the model, and that takes a little bit of time too. But it won't take too much here because they've done quite a bit of that work already. The 12,000 samples that we have on rare earths, that pertinent information has already been put into the model by the geologists. We just have to put this extra little bit in. So it should be fast. I like everything fast. What other questions?
I heard 2 weeks.
That's all I ever hear. Two weeks. Okay, so in closing, once again, I'd like to thank you all for your commitment, for being here today, coming out and learning the processes and the steps that we have to go through to make all this happen. This is a really good group of honest people. That's table stakes for us. Without honesty, we can't work together. So it's all about honesty to start with. We talk about that quite often. And then just because I like to kind of test Jim a little bit, I'm going to also say that if you have any questions, any ideas, anything at all that's on your mind, call us or email us and share it. The worst place to put it is where we see it, which is on those social websites, because we can't respond to those. But call us if you have a question. We're just open people. We'll tell you everything we can tell you before the lawyers get mad. That's us. So we're really, really glad to be here. It's a great place to do business. I just tell people all over the world what a great place Nebraska is to do business. Friendly, warm, honest, that's all we can ask for. And we'll give you the same. Thank you very much for your time.